Blog Talk Radio.
This is Haunted America with your hosts, Josh Mantello and Al Shepard on Blog Talk Radio. To discuss today's topics, call 646-716-5896. And now, Haunted America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
Go ahead, Josh.
I was just saying hello.
My name's Al Shepard, joined by the always talented Vanna Mantello. This is Haunted America Radio every Sunday night, 7 p.m., the bipolar paranormal radio show, as you will soon find out as we change topics from one thing to another tonight. What are we going to start off with tonight, Josh?
Oh, not a whole lot, nothing too fancy-smancy. You know, you're dying to know what happened at the Houghton Mansion last night, so I figured I would kind of clue in a little bit on that. I can't say it was somewhat uneventful night. Just before the show here, I know I said I was probably the only one that got scared. We did have one person actually run out of the building on us. But unfortunately, she was like with only one other person. And the people who were there that were kind of skeptical of ghosts were the ones that weren't with her and probably still now don't believe in ghosts because nothing happened. As much as myself and I gotta say, Chris Williams can taunt a spirit like with the best of them. As much as me and Chris taunted the hell out of Mary and John and AC last night, yeah, nothing happened. I had some fun with an ovulus. Those things are always fun to play with. The evidence they come up with is always kind of inconclusive. They're a new device, and I'm not even completely sold on them yet, but you never know. I can't say, well, it was pretty cool, actually. One of them, a good group of them are all upstairs, and they're playing around with the ovulus, and it's talking away. I'm walking down the hall and I hear this thing talking, and it sounds like, you know, somebody with a, you know, larynx box. I don't know how long it's talking like that, and things talking away. And of course, I go in the room and it shuts up. Doesn't say anything. Or doesn't say a lot. So after that, I go, well, guys, these ghosts might be, sometimes they go away when I'm around. They're sick of me. They don't want to talk to me. They're pissed off at me, whatever. And as I say that, and I go, well, I'm going to get up and leave now. And I get up and start walking out the door, and the thing goes, crack. So they just said, yeah, that's right. We don't want to talk to you right now, they pretty much said. And I took it as that and said, well, fine, then I'm getting out of here. And hopefully he talks to you some more than he talked to me.
I've always wondered, because your style of taunting ghosts and things, and then I've heard other people say just the opposite, that, you know, if you were a live person and someone was treating you like that, would you want to talk to them? So I often wonder if that doesn't work against you sometimes, depending on the particular spirit you're trying to talk to.
Yeah, you know, it all depends, I suppose, and hey, who knows? I don't know. Do you know?
Nobody knows. And that's exactly why, boy. All right. This is as good time as any, I guess. I've got to go. Let's see. Where is it? I got my argument saved right to my desktop here. I went and looked up the definition of specialist. I don't know where you got your definition from last week, but I went and looked up another definition. And for the people just tuning in, this has been an ongoing discussion for the last month now, whether you can actually be a specialist in paranormal research when no one really knows what's the right way and the wrong way to do anything anyway. So, according to Wikipedia, a specialist frequently refers to an expert in a profession. So I went and looked up the definition of expert. An expert is someone widely recognized as a reliable source of technique or skill whose faculty for judging or deciding rightly, justly, or wisely is accorded authority and status by their peers or the public in a specific, well-distinguished domain. An expert, more generally, is a person with extensive knowledge or ability based on research, experience, or occupation, and in a particular area of study. Experts are called in for advice on their respective subject, but they do not always agree on the particulars of a field of study. An expert can be, by virtue of training, education, profession, publication, or experience, believed to have special knowledge of a subject beyond that of the average person, sufficient that others may officially and legally rely upon the individual's opinion. Historically, an expert was referred to as a sage. The individual was usually a profound thinker, distinguished for wisdom and sound judgment. So, I'm not sure exactly where this falls.
All right, well, I got to pull that up. Real quick, the definition of expert on Wikipedia, you said?
Yep, there's another paragraph here. Experts have a prolonged or intense experience through practice and education in a particular field. In specific fields, the definition of expert is well established by consensus, and therefore it is not necessary for an individual to have a professional or academic qualification for them to be accepted as an expert. In this respect, a shepherd with 50 years of experience tending flocks would be widely recognized as having complete expertise in the use and training of sheepdogs and the care of sheep. Wait, yeah,
wait a minute. You get a special degree in herding those sheep? No, the continuing practice of doing it made him an expert.
Right. Another example from computer science is that an expert system may be taught by a human and thereafter considered an expert, often outperforming human beings at particular tasks. In law, an expert witness must be recognized by argument and authority. Okay, I knew you were going to jump all over that. So someone that's been in the field for 20 years could be widely recognized as being an expert in paranormal research if you can prove that what you're doing is right. but you can't. So, I don't think anybody can claim that title. It's like a shepherd could be an expert attending flocks and for the care of sheep, because we know what kills a sheep and what keeps it healthy and what does and what doesn't. But
what if it's a chupacabra that could be getting the sheep?
All I'm saying is, in order to be recognized as an expert, everyone would have to agree that what you're doing is correct. And
But how do you know it is? Because I'm the expert and I say so.
Mm-hmm. No, I found that last week right after we got off the air, and I said, I got to save that and just bring it up to them.
There's a couple lines in there. Here's one line. Sufficient that others may officially and parentheses, legally reply upon the individual's opinion. An opinion is an opinion. Opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one. You know, mine's just the expert opinion. another key spot in there is, believed to have special knowledge on a subject beyond that of the average person. That is where I could say you could be an expert and a specialist in the world of ghosts. I feel, and probably even you at this point through our conversations and just what we've talked to and who we've talked to over the last few months, have a special knowledge of the subject of ghosts beyond that of the average person. Would you say that you have a little bit more knowledge about ghosts and the paranormal beyond that of the average person?
Yeah. And
so then
you would fall
under an expert.
And I would say that you have a special knowledge of paranormal photography. But we don't know for sure if that knowledge is right. All we know is you know more than someone else does, but you could be totally going down the wrong path. We don't know yet. I think time will tell if you're an expert or you're not.
And I must say, Alex, like I was saying before, my pumpkin seeds came out very well.
All I'm saying is that, yes, you may very well be a specialist, you may very well be an expert, and when, as time goes on and other people keep duplicating your theories and coming up with the same answers, then, yes, you will be considered an expert. But if people all of a sudden start finding out that the old way is wrong and everybody starts going down a new path, you could very well be a kook just as fast.
Oh, I'm not arguing the fact that I'm a kook either. I mean, that's a gimme. So,
anyways, while we're on this subject of experts, I just got done about an hour ago booking a guest for us for November 15th. It will be demonologist Keith Johnson will be here on the show with us.
Keith, brother of Carol, and
husband of Sandra. Yes.
Sandra. After I couldn't think of her name, I felt bad. I was thinking, oh my God, he always does a lot of stuff with his wife, but I forgot her name. And see, I read it like a million times a week in some sort of ad for something.
Yep. He's been at this a good 30 years now or so, and I was really excited when he agreed to be on the show.
For those who have watched Ghost Hunters a lot, it's in the first season. Him and his brother were both cast members in the first season of Ghost Hunters on Sci-Fi. Very well-known and well-respected demonologist in the field of paranormal.
Right, and also in the first couple episodes of Paranormal State, too, they were on.
Yeah.
And they do their own TV show, Ghosts Are Near. I think that's on a local Massachusetts TV station.
They run the Northeast something Research Society, Afterlife Society or something like
Northeastern
that.
Northeastern Anomalies Research.
Anomalies Research. I knew Near actually stood for something there, and I didn't have it right in front of me. Very well known and respected. That'll be a good conversation. It'll be good to talk to him.
Yep. And I also got feelers out to a couple other people, Psychic Carly Rose and Constantino, too. So I'm waiting to hear back from both of them.
I love that movie. Is that movie?
I don't think I ever watched it, no.
You really should. Honestly, it's actually, before we have a demon type episode, that'd be a good movie to watch. I recommend anybody. It's entertaining, and it is Hollywood. But if you pay attention to it and listen to some of the names and some of the lores into it, it's really interesting. I think anybody who's into the paranormal and the afterlife and has a little bit of the interest into the demonology aspects of things, you'll find the movie actually very interesting for a modern day movie. It's not like The Exorcist, where, you know, it's very over the top. It's a little over the top, but within reason, I think, and it was really good.
Okay, yeah, I'll have to get my hands on that and watch that next couple weeks. Anyways, that'll be November 15th when he's coming up. Next week, I guess we're going to talk about ghost stories. So I got to dig out all my Mark Nesbitt Ghost of Gettysburg books. I'm actually searching for some audio versions of ghost stories. So I'm trying to pull up some short campfire tales or something in audio version. So that'll be fun.
Yes, it will be. I was scared last night.
Yeah, okay. So let's get back to this. What scared you?
Well, here I am trying to be the professional investigator. And, you know, because we got, you know, one of the ultimate professional investigators with us, you know, Chris Williams of CAPS and Sci-Fi Channel Ghost Hunters. I don't want to be the guy who coughs all over the radio show. But, oh, excuse me.
You gotta have a mute button handy, you know.
I do, but it's in my pocket on my phone. Oh, wow. I want to be the professional guy and not be the one to walk around and be real loud. It was 10, 11 o'clock at night, and everybody's investigating. And I always kind of take pride in, you know, I don't jump easily. I don't get started, especially on investigations. I don't jump easily. I don't get, you know, scared very easily. And, you know, I always say, you know, you shouldn't be jumpy on an investigation. And especially in the Houghton Mansion, of all the places in the world, that's where I'm the most comfortable. I'm going to walk around there in the pitch dark and not hit something. I know every bump and, you know, piece of furniture in that place and how to walk around it in the dark. And so I got this gentleman with me who, won on the radio station there, WAF, a chance to come out and investigate with their morning crew and Chris. So I'm going through, like, we gotta be quiet, not to try investigating. We gotta be really, real quiet, and we're walking real slow. And we're going into the lodge room part there. There's a set of double doors, and there's a little hallway you walk across, and another set of double doors. So I'm going quiet, and I don't hear anything. So they go, they must be really doing something, because they're being real quiet. And as I'm going, I go, okay, let's be quiet. And I get through one set of double doors, so it jumps right out from the corner and, like, screams at me. Rah! And I'm like, ah! I jump and grab her. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. It scared the hell out of me.
So that particular person wasn't being very serious, I take it.
They're having
that
fun.
One of the skeptics, was it?
Oh, that was Chris. She scared the hell out of me.
Yeah. Oh, so she did it.
She scared me. Scared the hell out of me.
Oh, I'll bet she had fun when she goes back and tells everybody else.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be the laughing stock of the A-list ghost hunters.
Oh, that would have been funny to see. Tell me about the car trouble.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Maybe there was a curse to Mr. Houghton. I don't know. Last night, my girlfriend was there and came down just to say hi because we weren't going to see her all day. I'm getting ready to leave before everybody showed up because everybody was running late. For those of you who are in the Northeast, you all know that the weather was atrocious the last 24 hours there. We were no better. We had horrible weather, too, and everybody had a hard time getting there. Everybody was running late, so she was leaving. She came out. She had a flat tire. So we're in a pouring rain in a mud driveway, changing the tire. It ends up being a big slice in the inside sidewall. So then we get that back on, and we're filthy. There's going to stop the car, and while we were changing the tire, it was off with the headlights on, and the battery died. It was just a pain. It was just royal pain all around. Nothing's ever made easy for us here.
I mean, you could say that's coincidence, I suppose, but you got to wonder in the back of your mind, you know.
I don't know. I don't believe in coincidence. I really don't. I think everything happens for a reason.
Well, yeah, it probably did. I mean, a skeptic could say, yeah, the tire happened because she ran over something, and battery happened because you left the lights on too long.
Yeah, but still, everything happens for a reason.
Anyways, looking ahead to next week, tickets still available for the 30th, or they sold out finally?
No, well, they're available. I talked to him last night. They're not going as fast as we thought they would, so they probably won't sell out, it looks like. He is going to cap the tickets. He is going to take them off sale. He is going to cap them at a certain point, so if you want to go, buy some. Oh, here's my voice
right.
in the background again.
Well, make sure you let me know, because I've got him announcing it on the local AM station here, so I'll make sure I tell him to stop when he finally caps the tickets. So.
Yeah, he'll let me know. But it'll be a smaller crowd, which is better, because then we'll find more ghosts.
Yeah, hopefully. That'll be cool. I'm going to be on Dr. Carol Tunney's show, Natural Instincts, Friday morning at 10 a.m. People can listen in on that, WBTNAM.org. I believe they're having Danielle, that was on our show a few weeks back with Kelly Ballard. Danielle's going to be on that show as well, I believe, and I believe a third person. I'm not sure who. So, I know who. The one you know down your way, the guy that wrote for the Berkshire Eagle and all that stuff.
Joe Dorwin?
What was it?
Joe Dorwin?
Yeah, that's it.
He's very he's actually, what he does is a very important part of paranormal investigating, in my opinion. I mean, he's not so much an investigator, but, you know, but he's a folklorist. And he knows, you know, the folklores and stories of the Berkshire, Southern Vermont, and better than anyone else. And a lot of times when you kind of want to know what's going on with a story, you know, someone like that's really good to go to, because they kind of have the, you know, folklore is a story that's been handed down from generation to generation. So, you know, sometimes these are your only gauge, nearly chance of really kind of getting the story is from the folklorists, the people who have these stories that are hundreds of years old.
Yeah, because a lot of times that the folklore, the legend, grew out of an actual true story. So someone like that might be able to bring you back to the point of origin or something, so you can get a handle on what happened, you know, and where it started.
Right, absolutely. That's a very good point. What was I going to say? Did you ever get a chance to watch The Zeitgeist? All right, brought that up to you last week.
No, I was going to, and then I got busy and forgot all about it again. How do you spell that, anyway?
I'll put it in the chat room in 1 minute.
All right. Yeah, because I want to check that out.
I know, I mentioned it to a few people last week. I mentioned on the show last week, and a few people were listening. Anybody who's into the paranormal, and when we talk a little bit every now and then about how religion plays into the paranormal, and how different religious beliefs have different belief systems in the afterlife, in particular Christianity doesn't believe in an afterlife where one can hang around. They only believe in an afterlife where you either go to heaven or you go to hell, and that's it. There's no purgatory. There's no lingering around or no going to the light or not going to the light. There's just heaven and hell. I haven't really ever watched the entire show here on Zeitgeist, but I gotta say it's the first 20 minutes. The first 5 minutes is a lot of weird pictures and goofy music, and you just fast forward through that until you get to the actual movie part. The opening music and stuff is pretty corny. And then from that on, it's about 20 minutes of talk about religion and modern-day religion and how they are all just models of the same thing, and every religion is the same. It's really eye-opening. I recommend anybody watch it. And then after that, it goes on with some government conspiracy type mumbo jumbo and stuff. I don't know, but the first half is what I really expect people to. I hope people watch and listen to it and kind of opens up their minds a little bit. It's very cool.
Yeah, I'm just checking it out here. One best feature activist spirit, Artivist Film Festival, 2007 and 2008. Looks like they got an addendum, something that they.
And the addendum is the second one. This is old. Yeah. They've created a second one, Zeitgeist 2, the addendum. Hey, look at that. Peter Joseph, he was just on Blog Talk this week. Look at that. Oh, no, he hosted it. See, that's the creator of this. He's not right on Blog Talk with us.
Huh.
There he is.
Oh, we'll have to go check out his channel.
Zeitgeist Movement, yeah. Radio show with Peter Joseph. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if Blog Talk works for him. You know, he's got this award-winning film and everything. I wonder if he has to call in, or if the Click to Talk button works for him.
yeah, that'd be interesting to see if he gets special treatment. You know, maybe that's why our show never works, right? Because he's hogging it all.
You know, we start going around and polling these other people, and can I ask you something? How many listeners do you have? Okay, you got about 1,000 listeners. We got about 4. Does your Click to Talk button work or nah? Oh, yeah, ours doesn't.
Yeah. Just thinking of that, I was going through the old shows today, looking at how many people have listened to the archived shows, just kind of seeing what's most popular. Number one most listened to of our shows is the one with John Cordham from the Monroe Institute. Number two was Michael Baker from the 14 Degrees movie, and number three was Psychic Gemini Rose. So just kind of interesting to see what's turning out to be the most popular so far, anyway.
Oh, yeah, I think a lot of it is, you know, those are popular people. With, like, Gemini, it was another Blog Talk, a host, she hosts her own show, so I think, you know, we were kind of pulling in a little bit of different, you know, a different audience. They're always fun. I'd like to get Gemini back on. That was a good conversation. I think that one was I late going into that one? I remember.
I think you were gone that week. You went to a concert or something.
No. That was, I had tickets with my kids to go see the dinosaurs at, Pepsi Arena or Times, whatever it's called now.
And then the next time we had Psychic Kelly Ballard on, you were gone that week too. You had to work or something. So, is this there's some subconscious thing here where you're trying to avoid psychics or what?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I am. I don't like psychics.
Actually, I stumbled on something last night, so I got to ask you, as founder of the Berkshire Paranormal Group, do you investigate hauntings of mobile homes different than you investigate hauntings of houses?
Well, it depends if I have to wear a plaid shirt or not.
You know I'm trying to corner you into something here. I found this last night. I got to play it for you. So here, take a listen to this.
Hello, this is 911. What is your emergency?
Hello, never mind. You've got to help me. There's a ghost in my trailer.
Excuse me, ma'am?
There's a ghost in my trailer. He's been flipping and flopping and flying all over.
Ma'am, please calm down. Ghosts do not haunt mobile homes.
Yes, they do. I saw it on hard copy.
Okay, what is the ghost doing?
He turned the lights on and off, and then he knocked on the door.
Are you sure it's not the power company?
No, he's right here on the couch eating Cheetos.
Okay, what does the ghost look like?
He's invisible. I can only see the orange stuff around his fingers and his mouth.
Sound familiar? This scenario happens every day at trailer parks across America. Experts estimate that one out of every 6 mobile homes is haunted by a ghost or perhaps a possum. You could be next. Here are some telltale signs. A can of skull mysteriously floats through the air. Blood drips out of your simulated wood paneling. The room is spinning and you're not even drunk yet. If you think your trailer may have an unwanted guest, please call Trailer Exterminators. We specialize in mobile home ghost removal as well as the extermination of aliens, secret government bugs, and in-laws. Don't call 911. Call us now.
Trailer Exterminators, may I help you?
Yeah, the government has built a tiny robotic inchworm that has infiltrated my compound and attempted to steal my secret corn squeezing recipe.
Don't worry, sir. We'll be right over.
All right, but hurry, because they're about to unleash a giant bat.
Don't delay. Call now. Double Y's at you.
Maybe you should make a commercial or something to get on the air and stuff and generate some more business for you.
I could. I don't know. I don't think I could use any more business. I have four investigators right now, and they're always busy. I think you're going to see a lot of change in Berkshire Paranormal and in the way I operate things and the way things are done. Oh, I would say in about 3 weeks, I got a lot of things going on and some pretty big things and important things in my life happening in the next 3 weeks. And when everything's done and over with, I will kind of finally know the path for the rest of my life and where I'm going to be going. And part of it, a lot of it's going to be kind of restructuring Berkshire Paranormal, getting Jay Mantello events running, putting forward some more, more effort into Haunted America, getting better jobs, moving forward, and a lot of the stuff I've put to the wayside over the last 2 months, and barely keeping it head above water. I'm going to get on some dry ground and some good footing and move forward. So, anybody who is listening, and hopefully somebody is, hope for me, and we'll get through this. And I promise that a lot of good things are going to come out of it in the next year.
Vote for you. Are you going to run for politician or something?
I didn't say vote. No. I said hope.
Okay. Anyways, that little bit was done by comedian Larry Weaver. I emailed him, asked for permission to play it, and he didn't answer me. He ignored me, so of course I played it anyway. So go to www.larryweaver.com, and you can hear some more interesting little skits by him. I thought that was funny, though.
I got a funny, I don't know if this is funny or not. Every now and then I like to surf through the paranormal news and see what's out there. Have you seen the new show on, I think it is, what show? What is it? It's on the Biography Channel called Celebrity Ghost Stories. Are you familiar with that?
I saw the previews. I haven't actually seen an episode of it yet, but I did see a preview.
And this is kind of odd. It's a sad situation. I'll read this. It came across the ghostvillage.com newswire. And file this under, squarely under creepy. A few months before his body was found hanging in a Bangkok hotel room closet, David Carradine sat down and discussed a ghost he believed was haunting him from a closet. In an interview taped for the October 3rd premiere of the bio show Celebrity Ghost Stories, centers on Carradine's belief that his wife, Annie's deceased husband, Dana, was using the closet in their bedroom as home base to spook them. In the footage, the late Kung Fu actor describes the icy cold feeling he got. I think he was hanging out in the closet, and sometimes when I walked into the closet, I would be cold. They're unreasonably cold, Carradine said, according to the quotes of the New York Post, which claims that it was his final interview ever. Just kind of, you think somebody with a long acting career like that, and his last interview is that of a ghost in his closet. But Carradine was equally freaked out by one of Dana's tries that reminded him of his closet. And it goes on and on. It's actually quite a long article. I know they ruled his death a suicide, but that's kind of weird that you would think that he had a ghost in his closet and he was found hung in his closet. wonder if there's the people paranormally kind of looking into that a little bit more.
I didn't even realize he'd killed himself. I never paid any attention to how he died. I just knew he had. So that's really weird.
Yeah, well, it's file that under creepy, as just like the article says. It's definitely just kind of an odd thing that happened. Which, odd things happen every day. I mean, hey, I don't get scared for 2 years, and some persons they would jump out and scare me at the Houghton Mansion last night.
I see also here, confirmed haunted property in New Mexico, Ghost Town, for sale on eBay. So if you want to buy a 100-year-old adobe home, which was recently confirmed by paranormal investigation experts as being haunted.
Well, at least they weren't specialists that confirmed it.
Exactly, they're experts. So they decided, yes, it is. There seem to be benevolent spirits there, and they often find them offering help in little ways. The place is now for sale on eBay if you'd like to buy an actual haunted house. So
I see some, there's some big opportunity in that right there. We could, one, it's New Mexico, so we don't have to worry about the snow this year. Two, if we buy that, we could just broadcast 24 hours a day live Haunted America Radio from our own haunted town.
Yeah, that would be cool. So the auction started October 1st. It'll go to Halloween. I'm putting the link up in the chat room right now. But I guess you could just kind of go to eBay and search for haunted adobe home, I guess. If you're listening to the archive, you got till Halloween. So I'm going to have to jump over there now just to see what the price is, what the bidding's up to here. It's kind of got my curiosity going now.
I'd be shocked if anybody has bid at all. I mean, who bids on an entire town?
This is just one house in a haunted ghost town. This is a 100-year-old adobe house in a confirmed ghost town. And bidding is up to $20,100, but the reserve has not yet been met. So,
$20,000? I mean, this is a home. You're gonna buy a home for only $20,000? I mean, come on.
It's in a remote New Mexico ghost town, it says it's near Truth or Consequences, Elephant Butte Lake, and the Gila National Forest and Spaceport.
A spaceport? It has its own spaceport.
Nearby. Okay. The haunted home will be sold with several of its original furnishings, including an antique wood-burning stove in New Mexico, an antique wedding dress. Okay. And a religious shrine discovered tucked away in a back closet. Maybe this is where the ghost of David Carradine spends his winters or something.
Maybe. Haunted, you got a wood stove in there, though. I mean, I guess it must be the high desert there. It does get cold at night.
Says the house's paranormal status was confirmed in May 2009 after the owner contacted the West Coast Ghost and Paranormal Society, who traveled there to investigate it. Shortly after their visit, the society personnel confirmed his suspicions that the property was in fact haunted.
Well, I'm going to get going on a whole sort of long spiel about that now, so I'm just going to stop before I get started. Confirmed, haunted, I mean, I think even in some of my reports, I'll say that I feel it's haunted. I don't think I've ever confirmed, what do they do after they perform an investigation? They give you, a certificate of authenticity?
Yeah, it's like a certificate of occupancy, you hang it on your wall. Certified haunted.
I don't know, what do they give you? Is there a special diploma for you to hang on the wall for your, You're haunted. So here's a special certificate of authenticity from the investigators of the dead, whatever. For all I know, that probably is a real group. And not a bing. Here you go. You're certifiably haunted. I don't know.
Well, now, the home has been investigated by several ghost investigators from New Mexico, Arizona, and California, and was featured in several national and local media outlets, including MSNBC, Yahoo, AOL, ABC News, and many others. The guy writing this, the guy that's selling it, personally lived in the home for 2 years and has had many strange and unexplainable events. So, you know, it's hard to... It's hard to dismiss all that stuff, you know. It's got to be certifiably haunted.
Absolutely. I don't see why not. One more thing I kind of wanted to mention while we're just kind of doing our little banter here. For those of you who are in the Northeast, particularly Western Mass, feel free to tune into WGBY on Thursday night. Me, along with Nick from Berkshire Paranormal, will be getting interviewed, and they will be premiering a new documentary, Things That Go Bump in the Night, I believe it's called. And it's featuring the Houghton Mansion, and I don't know how much of me, but they had probably a good hour-long interview that they did with me, and obviously that's only a 40-minute show, and they're not going to do 40 minutes of me, as interesting as it probably would be. They probably have a few other guests on there too, so feel free to tune in and listen to that or watch that on WGBY, the PBS station out of Springfield, Massachusetts.
Yeah, I just put the link in the chat room, wgby.org/hauntednewengland.
That's it, Haunted New England.
Name of the show is "Things That Go Bump in the Night: Tales of Haunted New England." So, yeah, I'm gonna have to remember to watch that myself. That sounds very interesting.
Oh, we all of a sudden got some people in the chat room. Hello, everybody.
Yes, we do. We
have
a few.
I exited out of it because it was just you in there, and I figured, well, since I'm talking to you, I don't need to chat with you, too.
Fine. Be that way.
So those of you who are in there, hi. Thanks for listening. Glad to have you here. Feel free to call in. It's the Halloween season, which is my favorite time of year. I don't know about everybody else. I love this time of year. The smell in the air, the cold, chilly nights, they're the best nights to sleep for me. Just the feeling and the atmosphere and everything else. Oh, somebody else just popped in. We're gaining popularity here. And, I love this time of year. So, and I think some of the best part is the ghost stories and the popularity that we suddenly get, and I love to hear ghost stories. I love hearing other people's experiences and stuff that happened to them. Feel free, if you're here and you're listening, call in, let us know your story, and the number to call in is, I just had it in front of me, there it is, 646-716-5896, 646-716-5896. Or you can try, and I stress the word try, and use the push-to-talk button on your main page of blogtalkradio.com/haunted, and you can try only to do that, because it never seems to work for either of us. Call in, give us your ghost story, talk, see if we can break our record. We had, I think our record is 3 callers in one night, and let's see if we could maybe get 4, especially coming into this time of the year. But
I think you like this time of year because people aren't asking you why you're still wearing your mask.
Yeah, that too. It could be.
Anyways, I'm looking forward to the next week. Next week got a lot of good things going on. Going to be fun. Next Sunday we're going to kind of finish up the Halloween week with a whole show of just ghost stories, and I'm going to try and dig out some interesting ones. I listening to a couple last night that are on audiobook, which were actually would work good for here. They're like 5-minute stories we could just play, and those were kind of fun too. So I'll see what I can find.
Oh, one thing. It's actually kind of it's funny. I wanted to talk about this, and when I emailed you is saying what I was going to talk about, I forgot I wanted to bring this up. I had a really different kind of presentation this week. I gave a lecture to the Rotary Club in Williamstown, Massachusetts, up here, and it was different. For those of you, I mean, even the people listening, you're probably interested in ghosts and you're interested in the paranormal. So you have some sort of general basic knowledge of what I'm already talking about. Talking to this Rotary Club was quite weird. An older crowd, nothing against older people, but it was a much older crowd than I'm used to. And it was also the biggest crowd I've ever talked to of, not the biggest crowd per person, but the biggest group of non-believers, no clue of what I'm talking about group I've ever stood in front of. And a lot of very puzzled looks on their faces when I was talking. I gotta say, it was very interesting, and it made me think of something, and that's what I wanted to do is how can I convince these people that we are normal people here? And one thing, I remember we talked about it a while back on the show, and I think I wanted to devote more of a show to it, and I'm contemplating sitting down maybe after next week and writing a blog on it, or article or whatever you want to call it, and posting it on Ghost Village and a couple other places. You know, why do we investigate? And it turned into my whole half hour lecture was, you know, we're not just a bunch of people running around in the dark that wear black clothes and pretend to be gothic. You know, we're normal people with normal jobs, and that true ghost hunters, true paranormal investigators, we're not out there to be the famous ghost hunters. We're not out there to be the next TV show. We're out there to perform a service. We are ghost hunting groups, paranormal investigators. Now, I'm going to start stressing this everywhere I go and wherever I talk as much as I can. We all should be service-based first. We are here to serve the people who call us because their house is haunted. They're calling us because they are afraid to be in their house. They're calling us because they're uncomfortable in the situation they're living in, and they're calling us for help. They're not calling us so that we can go to their house and take pictures and hopefully be the next person to catch the next famous ghost picture to post all over the internet. They're not calling us so that we can take cool pictures posing like tough guys in a haunted house to put on the internet. They're calling us because they're looking for assistance. They're calling us so they can go to sleep easier at night, and we can tell them that it's not a ghost in their house, that it's your window shaking, or it is a ghost, but we can take care of it. We can find someone who can take care of it, or make them feel better. It's going to start becoming a very big pet peeve for me, and I think you're going to, wherever I talk, it's going to quickly become one of my most talked about aspects in my lectures, I think.
You might lose a few friends in that process as well, you know.
I don't know. If I do. I am nothing against the ones who are on TV. They did it and they're there, but they perform a service too. I'm talking about all these new groups that are out here, and there's a million. You all know who you are. There's a million new groups in this world, and they're not doing it to be a service to the community. They're not doing it to help these people who are calling. They do it so they can pose with their arms crossed and look tough and have cool shots to put on their MySpaces and Facebooks and have me be the next popular one to find that cool video to post on the internet. They're not doing it to help people out. They're doing it for themselves, I think. And that's becoming a problem, I think, in the paranormal investigative world, is there's too many, I guess, I'm going to use a slang word here, too many posers out there. And all they seem to do when they're getting their picture taken, you know, for their group is posing.
And I got to give, first of all, give kudos to the groundbreaking groups that started the first shows, you know, and really got this wave of paranormal interest going. And but even some of them now are starting to head down the path of bringing celebrities in with them on their investigations and all this other stuff, and it makes you just wonder if the only reason they're doing it is, you know, now they're more interested in ratings than anything else. So, like you said, every paranormal group should be a service-based group. They should never forget that the number one thing is helping the client, putting the client at ease, whether you find the place to be haunted or you find natural causes, whatever it is. You should always be working for the client. If you come up with some great evidence in the process, then great. But that shouldn't be the driving force behind the investigating.
Absolutely. So, Al, can you tell me where the first American vampire case was?
I want to say Rhode Island.
Ah, that's what you would think. Rhode Island is a very popular vampire destination. a lot of people believe that that Bram Stoker's Dracula was not based on, but he was inspired by the stories of vampirism in Rhode Island, helped him write Dracula, or inspired him to write Dracula. But there's more to it, and there's actually a ghost story prior to that. And it's in a much closer location than we would think. And why don't we take a little break? Because I lost all my pages, and for those of you who are in the chat room just saw all my pages that I had up here. And I want to see if anybody can think of it while we take our little self-promotion plug. And anybody who can answer it without cheating and going and Googling it, can let us know. I just kind of quiz the audience out there. Yeah, I can quiz you.
Yeah, you'll have to quiz me because I was sure it was going to be Rhode Island. So I'm kind of wondering now. I don't know. So anyways, yeah, we'll take a little what we call our shameless self-promotional break. Because this show pays us absolutely nothing, and we do have to eat. So those of you who listened to the show know a long time ago I watched the movie The Secret, became interested in the Law of Attraction. Right after that, I stumbled on a company called Send Out Cards. And definitely helps me put the Law of Attraction to work in my life every single day. We'll be back in a minute.
Sending a heartfelt message is one of the best ways to touch someone, to touch the heart. But it's easy to forget birthdays, anniversaries, and other special occasions. Imagine how many lives you would touch if it was easy to send those heartfelt messages. Send Out Cards provides a way for you to send a personalized greeting card to a friend, loved one, or business associate in less than 60 seconds from the convenience of your computer. You can even add a gift or gift card. Send Out Cards is about helping people reach out to those around them. It's amazing what a simple message can do. Send Out Cards helps you act on your promptings to reach out and change lives.
That's the sound of your door when the happy birthday cake from Send Out Cards arrives with your personalized birthday card. You can now send a cake with a card, and your loved one can simply add water, then throw it in the microwave for 60 seconds, and celebrate their birthday with a quick and delicious happy birthday cake. It comes with everything you need. Just add the water and start the celebration 1 minute later. You'll get the cake, sprinkles, frosting, candle, party horn, balloon, and the measuring supplies. This perfect single-serving chocolate cake is just 32 points in the Send Out Card system and $6 shipping and handling. Oh yeah, one more thing. Happy birthday. Check out www.sendoutcards.com for a unique and fast way to send custom greeting cards and gifts. Down, boy. Hey, if you're like us, you love your pet.
Who's a good boy?
That's why Send Out Cards has gifts for both dogs and cats.
What?
Send Out Cards allows you to send that adorable canine or fluffy kitty tasty treats. For those dog lovers, Send Out Cards has minty fresh and up-close milk bones, so when you smooth that pup, it's unforgettable. And if you have a good kitty, the crunchy and delicious cat treats that come in a custom green gift bag keep them coming back for more. Don't forget your favorite pet. Let them know just how much you love them and send them a card and treat today from Send Out Cards. The Minty Milk Bones are only 33 points and $6 shipping and handling. Those cat treats are 29 points in the Send Out Card system and just $6.50 shipping and handling. Check out www.sendoutcards.com for a unique and fast way to send custom greeting cards and gifts to.
Hi, for those of you who just tuned in, everyone here is a crazy person. You know, I think there may be a valuable lesson for you gals here about inviting strange men into your bedrooms.
And now, on to America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
Come on, let's get this gay show on the gay road. Help me out here.
And we are back. And if you'd like to know more about Send Out Cards, go to sendoutcards.com/31837 or call me, 516-422-5379. I'll tell you all about the awesome stuff. Did you find your notes, Josh?
Yeah, kind of. Since we're doing self-promotions, I'll just let everybody know. For those of you who do listen regularly, the Equinox event is still on. Keep watching jmantelloevents.com, and everything will be up on that as it happens. I'm just kind of waiting to get...
All right.
No, somebody... All right, you are there. Okay.
Oh, I'm here. I just didn't know who disappeared. One of us did.
No, we're still here. I heard a dial tone. The event's still on. Keep checking jmantelloevents.com for things to develop as they go. I'm just kind of waiting to get through the Halloween season. Equinox Resort and Spa in Manchester, Vermont. Now, do you have any idea where the first vampire case of America, and particularly New England, took place?
Well, before we get to that, do you want to announce the things coming up next weekend?
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I was so worried thinking about Manchester. October 30th. I had a complete loss of thought there. On October 30th, the day before Halloween, come up to the Houghton Mansion. Feel free to check us out. Come on up. We have Dustin Perry from Ghost Hunters, Ghost Hunters International, a member of TAPS, will be there investigating along with CC the Huntstress. I believe tickets are still on sale. I know they are, actually, but he is going to be capping it off soon, very soon. So if you want to go, go now. Tickets can be purchased at Ideal Event through Ideal Event Manage. Ideal Event Management, I'm putting their webpage up on the chat room now, and you can go there and purchase your tickets and meet me there. It'll be a lot of fun. I think Al's going to be stopping down too, so if you actually go there and you go to that main page, actually it's right there on the main page, Dustin Perry and CC Carroll, the Huntstress, at the Haunted Houghton Mansion, sponsored by Sobey and the Scare House. Purchase tickets at that little address I just gave you, $125 for the night. And you believe if we click here, it'll give you a quick little itinerary, but you come in at 6 o'clock at night, do a quick little meet and greet with Dustin. You get a Q&A session with Dustin. You get a lecture from CC the Huntstress. You get a talk from me. You get to hear me talk for a little while longer besides your normal two-hour weekly dose on Haunted America Radio. Just a quick little history and overview of the mansion, a quick little half hour on. If you can spare me for the two of the show, I'm sure you can deal with a half hour here that night. And then from 9 p.m. to 2 a.m., so 5 hours of actual investigation time at the mansion. Great place, and hopefully it turns around and is more active that night than it was last night, where the only thing that's getting scared was Chris Williams jumping out and scaring
me. I'm waiting to hear the blooper reel on that.
Yeah, there's no blooper reel. There's no cameras present. It's just I'm the only one that'll know, and I might never mention it again after today.
All right, now how about Halloween?
I don't know yet. Honestly, I'm just thinking of actually relaxing Halloween. I might just go down to the Houghton Mansion by myself and just a couple of close friends and look for some ghosts. That's a very good possibility to me right now.
Well, you need to let me know so I can tell them what to announce on the radio and what not to.
I know. I got so much going. It's been crazy. I got the interview on Thursday night, casting Friday night, and now, I got two young kids, and I really don't want to miss trick-or-treating, which is the big, reason why I didn't really plan anything big for Halloween night, because, that was always big for me when I was a kid. I don't want to ruin it for my kids just because I hunt ghosts for a hobby. So I tried to keep it kind of clear so I can get them in their costumes and take them out trick-or-treating. You don't like it? Well,
yeah,
too bad.
But there's plenty of time for adults to trick-or-treat after the kids are all done, though, and back home.
True. All right. So does anybody, come on, there's 1, 2, 4 people, only 4 people in the chat room now. The others left us, class. I even kind of hinted to where it is. I don't know if anybody even noticed where the first vampire case was. I've even said the town and state. In the last 10 minutes, I've said the town and state.
Did you actually type it in the chat room, too?
Oh, I said it right to you. I didn't type it in the chat room. No, I didn't type it in the chat room. It's not North Adams.
Well, we got a new person just come in the room, Gettysburg Spirit here, and
another
guest. So Josh wants to know where the first vampire case was reported in the United States. So if you know, type it in the chat room or give a call, 646-716-5896. Got to do it quick before he gives away the answer.
And I already gave it away, which is weird. Nobody, I tried dropping the hint. I've mentioned the town already within the last 10 minutes. But let me read you the story. I'll try and read the story. This is from the webpage I picked up. All right. Apparently, the earliest reported vampire incident took place in blank, in 1793, 4 years earlier than some of your earlier Rhode Island cases. Captain Isaac Burton, a deacon in the Congregational Church, wed Rachel Harris. Judge John S. Pettibone, 1786-1872, picks up the story. So here is kind of the story from His Honor, Pettibone. She was, to use the words, one of those well one who was well acquainted with her, a fine, healthy, beautiful girl. Not long after she was married, she went into a decline, and after a year or so, died of consumption. Now, when we start talking a lot about vampire cases here in New England, and there are quite a few, a lot of them do revolve around consumption. And for those who don't know, consumption is what we would now call tuberculosis. Tuberculosis was a horrible plague and killed thousands upon thousands of people in the early part of the 19th or of the 20th century and late part of the 19th century and the 1700s, 1800s. It's a very horrible disease. Captain Burton, after a year or more married Huluda Powell, daughter of Esquire Powell, by the first wife. Hulda, there are some weird names in this town. Wow. Hulda was a very wealthy, good-looking girl. Not as handsome as his first wife. She became ill soon after they were married. And when she was in the last stages of consumption, a strange infatuation took possession of their mind, of the connection of their friends and family. They were induced to believe that if the vitals of the first wife could be consumed by being burned in a charcoal fire, it would effect a cure of the sick second wife. Such was the strange delusion that they determined The first wife, not determined, disinterred the first wife, who had been buried about 3 years. They took out the liver, heart, and lungs, what remained of them, and burned them to ashes on a blacksmith's forge of Jacob Mead. Timothy Mead officiated at the altar in the sacrifice to the demon vampire, who, it was believed, was still sucking the blood of then-living wife Captain Burton. It was the month of February and good slaying. Such was the experiment that from 500 to 1,000 people were present. The account was furnished to me by the eyewitness of the transition. Now, basically, and we're not talking about, when we talk about now, and we're talking about true life vampires, I guess. As weird as it sounds, we're talking about real life vampires. We're not talking about your Hollywood Twilight vampires here, or your Anne Rice novel vampires, or your Dracula vampires. We're talking about people here who are dying of and just like anything else, just like the disease did to the body, just like it sounded, it consumed the body. The body would just consume in on itself. So it looked like they were being drained of life and blood. So they were under the thought that they had a vampire in their town. And somehow this vampire might have been the first wife. And to help rid, cure the second wife and stop the first wife from doing the vampirism, they took out her heart, her liver, and other organs, burned them to ash, and then ate them.
Gross.
Hey, it's your neck of the woods, man. You're the people doing it.
That's like, I just popped into my mind, Rocky Mountain oysters. Gross.
All right. That nobody seems to know where it is. The first vampire, it was Manchester, Vermont. You know, like I just said, I just said Manchester. We're doing an event up there. Maybe we could actually do something with the vampires up there while we're looking for ghosts.
Want you to forward me that story, though. I want to get that on our AM station. That's a cool little story.
And your AM station is probably within listening distance. Yeah, no, actually, I know it's within listening distance of that town. Your AM station reaches Manchester at least a little bit. And, I wonder how many people in Manchester actually know that they are the home of the first reported vampire case in the area. Now, a lot more of them did pop up throughout the years. And Rhode Island really became the more hotbed of vampire stories in the United States, and to this day is the more popular vampire location. And a lot of them revolve around Mercy Brown, the Rhode Island vampire. There are such things. Sorry, Jeff, I'm going to plagiarize you here. There are such beings as vampires. Some of us have evidence that they exist. Oh, I'm not going to read this whole thing. I'm sorry. I wasn't going to do it. But it was pretty much the same. This took place in 1792. And what did she die of? She was only 19 years old when she died of consumption.
The person dying of consumption, now, they believe that they were the vampire, or they were being fed off of from a vampire?
Well, I think what part of this has to do is, now let's start thinking more about we talked a little bit more now about the modern day modern day theories, not even theories. When you watch the movies and we talk about vampires, you know, what is it? You know, if you're bitten by a vampire, you'll become a vampire, right? You know? type of thing. You know, every story has its own. There's vampire genres. You know, in one movie you kill one this way, in another movie you kill them this way, in another movie they can't be killed at all. You know, they all kind of have the theme though. In some way, if you are bitten by the vampire, you and yourself become one. This might have part of it, but I'll read. I did a quick little part of this. I'll read off of it too. But Marcy Brown has the distinction of being the last of the North American vampires, at least in the traditional sense. Marcy Lena Brown was a farmer's daughter and an upstanding member of the rural Exeter, Rhode Island community. She was only 19 years old when she died of consumption on January 17th, 1892. On March 17th, 1892, Marcy's body would be exhumed from the cemetery because members of the community suspected the vampire Marcy Brown was attacking her dying brother, Edwin. For help with Marcy Brown and vampirism, I spoke with Dr. Michael Bell. Now, Michael Bell, this might be someone, I might actually be, if I had thought at that time, and I've talked to him, I think, once before, bring him in as a guest of the show. I got to look up his information again. He just came to my mind again reading this today. Yeah, but he's a folklorist, and he wrote the book Food of the Dead. Food of the Dead, in a book that explores the folklore and the history behind Marcy Brown, as well as several other cases of New England vampires. And that's another great important thing. I think this is what everybody thinks vampires. They start thinking Transylvania, and they start thinking, you know, Europe. That this is a very prominent problem. I mean, this is a problem. Just like Massachusetts has witches and the witchcraft story, vampires. And the vampire stories are just as prominent in Rhode Island. Is, you know, vampires are to Rhode Island as witches are to Massachusetts, I guess. All right, folklore. Many people understanding of what a vampire is comes mostly from Bram Stoker's work in Anne Rice novels. But in traditional vampire is actually quite different, which is a kind of what I'm hoping to try and get to here. So, what a traditional vampire, Paul Barber wrote in the book called Vampires, Brew and Death, Dr. Bell said, he gives a forensic interpretation of vampire incidents. They're a natural phenomenon that wasn't understood by the people at the time because they didn't really know what happened to the bodies under different conditions. His definition is that a vampire is your classic scapegoat. I think his definition, if I can paraphrase, is something like a vampire is a corpse that comes to the attention of the community during a time of crisis and is taken for the cause of the crisis. Vampires of folklore were not the romantic characters of modern cinema. They were the walking dead who literally drained the life out of the victims. Attacking vampires was a way for a community to physically embody and fight an evil that is plaguing them. In the case of Marcy Brown, it was consumption. So what they're saying is that the body of this woman was a walking dead, was coming out and draining the life out of these other people. And if you read on, and there's a lot to kind of read here, but what happened is they exhumed her body, and she had been buried with other people. And what happened is when they pulled her up, her body hadn't really aged much on the ground, so it still looked relatively fresh as one, I guess, could be after being in the ground for those few months. And the body was on its side. It wasn't laying on its back. So it somehow had turned on its own in the grave, and blood was dripping from its mouth. And from that point on, she was the vampire. And there were rituals that involved the taking of body parts, burning them, and then consuming them in some sort of way and manner.
Okay, I don't know, that's not as sexy as Interview with a Vampire or Twilight, or, you don't get any big ratings with those stories.
No, you don't. Well, you know, that is, And right here, as I look down through, her visual condition prompted the group to, let's see. There's a suggestion in the newspaper that wasn't actually interpreted in the ground, Dr. Bell said. She was actually put in an above-ground crypt because bodies were stored in the wintertime in that manner when the ground was frozen and they couldn't really dig. When the thaw came, they would bury them. So it's possible that she wasn't even really interred. Her visual condition prompted the group to cut open her chest cavity and examine her innards, Dr. Bell said. They examined her organs. The newspaper said her heart and liver had blood in it. It was liquid blood, which they interpreted as fresh blood. Bell explained how forensics can clarify how blood can coagulate and become liquid again, but at this time the liquid was taken as evidence that Mercy was indeed a vamp. Mercy was indeed a vampire, and the one draining the life from Edwin and possibly other consumption victims in the community. Dr. Bell said they cut her heart out, and as Everett said, they burned it on a nearby rock. They, according to the newspaper, they fed him the ashes of the heart to Edwin being her brother, who was now dying of consumption after she herself had died. The folklore said that the destroying of the heart of a vampire would kill it, and by consuming the remains of the vampire's heart, the spell would be broken on the victim, and they would get well. That's pretty gruesome to think. I mean, just imagine that, for one, you're digging up your relatives, and then you're eating them. You're burning their hearts and their organs in consuming them to help yourself with now, I mean, with what is known as, it's really a disease that is almost wiped out and is very rare in tuberculosis, and it's inoculated and nobody ever gets it. For those who do, you're put on quarantine and your life is pretty miserable, but take the vaccine and you shouldn't get it. You know, a horrible, horrible disease that affected thousands and thousands of people. And it was being blamed upon in Rhode Island and Vermont and parts of Connecticut as vampires.
I don't know. I this just grosses me out. I couldn't eat anybody's body parts. Talk about a relative.
I mean, now here, which is funny because vampires are the most popular thing in the world right now. Everybody loves vampires. My daughter is going to be a vampire for Halloween. You know, but you think about it now. I mean, you have the Twilight movies. You got the new, what the hell is it called? The New Moon movie. You had Interview with a Vampire movie. There's a new movie coming out. It's a comedy. The Vampire's Assistant, I think it's called. Everybody's, their True Blood on HBO is one of the top-rated TV shows. You know, vampires have become, like, the newest fad in Americana culture nowadays. Every tween and teenager wants some sort of vampire book. And now, when we actually look back here into the 1800s and late 1700s of American society here and see what vampirism and the blaming of vampirism led people to do, it's really quite gory and probably more gory than some of the actual stories that we hear in the horror movies. I mean, digging up of dead bodies, cutting them open, let alone, I mean, how tragic and horrible these people look, dying of consumption, but then going out to the cemeteries, exhuming their dead relatives or any dead person, cutting their body open, looking for fresh blood, and then taking out organs, burning them, and then eating it. I mean, this isn't Edward and Bella type story here. This is, you know, this is some gory stuff happening in little old Manchester, Vermont, and Exeter, Rhode Island.
I'm gonna have to do some research on the town records now. You got me wondering, seeing it's only just up the road here.
That's right. And it's all you gotta do is Google search it. Get right on your computer, Google search, God, you got something in the background there where I can hear my own voice. It drives me nuts. And, oh, God, that's annoying.
Well, I don't know what it is, because my microphone's off when I'm not talking.
I don't know what it is. I just keep hearing myself in the background. All right, well, whatever. Do you know? Here, all right, here is the next question. I'm going to see if we can get somebody else. Where in I think I actually told you this already, but see if we can maybe get somebody in the chat room that might know where the where in Massachusetts did the witch trials happen before Salem?
Okay, so there was actually witch trials before the most infamous ones in Salem, Massachusetts. So you want to know where it was?
Absolutely. There were witch trials, and there was witch trials everywhere. I mean, I'm not saying that these ones were the first, but there were some more prominent ones back then that actually did take place in another part of Massachusetts, actually a pretty decent drive away from Salem, that I don't know if you can get it right off a quick Google search or not, but it's there, and it's a pretty small town. It's relatively close to me for those of you who might be kind of near me.
My guess is going to be in the Berkshire somewhere, but I'm not sure.
No, it's not in the Berkshires. It's actually in
We got somebody in the chat room who says they know it, they just can't think of it.
All right, well, let's see. If you're in the chat room. Now, let me look here. Actually, I have like 5 pages open on my internet browser right now. These witch trials took place in 1683, 11 years before the Salem witch trials. Molly Webster was accused and acquitted, though, of witchcraft charges. She was unsuccessfully hanged by a rowdy townfolk. That's kind of weird. Now, she was unsuccessfully hung. So if she survived the hanging, would that make them more suspicious of her being a witch? That would make me suspicious. A description is given by Cotton Mather's whatever that's. But anyways, it took place in Hadley, Massachusetts. Little small town. Actually, for me, Hadley is a great little town. It has a lot of great tobacco people. I love cigars, and some of the best cigar tobacco comes from Hadley. But yeah, the 11 years before the Salem witch trials, this poor woman was accused of being a witch, and apparently she survived her hanging. Still there, Al?
Yep, I'm here. I'm just watching the chat room to see if anybody was coming up with anything.
Well, I already sprung it, so they're all too bad. All right. I wanted to talk about witches tonight, and we got in actually a pretty decent conversation there for the first hour of the show, and that killed the cap of it. And this vampire stuff is, which is funny because I'm like, I don't know if I can do a whole. I don't want to do all 2 hours on witches because I'm not a specialist in witchcraft. I'm just an expert, but I'm not an expert either. I'm by far not an expert either. I have some friends, that are Wiccan, and I've done a lot of studying on it, and there's a lot of facets to it. I know for those of you who did look and saw, oh my God, Haunted America's talking about witchcraft tonight, I got to listen to it for all 2 hours. I'm sorry I didn't get to it, but I got to those vampire stories because I wanted to do something about vampires. It's Halloween, something, witches and vampires, And I got to those vampire stories, and I read those, and I go, that is just amazing of what they did, and I wanted to cover it. And somehow in our bipolar paranormal radio, as we always do, we talk, what did we talk about in the first hour? It was just some random ghost stories, which is fun, and hopefully everybody was entertained. But this time of year, everybody kind of gets into the whole witch thing, too, quite often. Just like we, as paranormal investigators become popular, the witch people. And a lot of it is kind of a misconception, too. Just like the witch trials back then, people had a lot of misconceptions about witchcraft. There's just as big of a misconception of it now. I don't think a lot of people who practice, well, and I'm sorry if I'm even offending anybody now, just in the way I'm wording it. I'm just trying to, generalize the best I can, I suppose. I know a lot of people don't even like to say they're witches, or they practice witchcraft. They practice Wiccan, which is a more proper way of saying it. I think what I guess, Al, what is your general knowledge or your first impression? When I say, if I were to come to you and say, well, I'm not Catholic or I'm not Baptist, I'm a Wiccan, what would you kind of instantly automatically think of, you know, me and what I do?
See, I don't know that much about it, so I guess, like a lot of people probably, I'm going to turn immediately to media, and I'm going to look at Willow on Buffy the Vampire Slayer and go, okay, that's what witches do. You know, sit around in circles and conjure up spells and play around with the different forces of the universe. But I honestly don't really know what, I wouldn't know good magic from bad magic, you know, black from white, all that stuff. I know they're doing a little research today, so I know Halloween is their new year. I guess you call it Samhain or something they call it. It's like the most, I don't know what you want to call it, most important of their 8 celebrations of the year or something. So I don't know that much about it.
You know, it's kind of their Christmas. It's a kind of Christmas for Wiccan. I mean, not so much where they're getting presents and putting up trees, but it's their, you know, for Catholics, Christmas is kind of their big day, and for pagans, Wiccans, it, you know, Halloween is their big day, and you're correct, it is not, you know, Halloween to them. And I'm not even going to try to say it. It's Samhain. I butcher it. I'm horrible, so I'm not even going to attempt to say it. But it's their day. There are spells involved. I did a lot of studying into witchcraft. A lot of people who I know quite a few people who are Wiccan, and you'd be surprised who is and who isn't. You'd honestly be very surprised. I'm going to bring this up. I remember it was on the news not too long back. There was somebody making a very big deal that the United States government, when burying soldiers who died in action, you know, will give them their kind of standard issue little military headstone, just like you see in Arlington National Cemetery, hundreds of them lined up perfectly. And based upon your faith, you get the symbol of that faith upon the headstone. Majority of them, obviously, are crosses for the Christians and Catholics. There are Stars of David for your Jewish people. And there was a handful of approved symbols by the government to put on these soldiers' headstones. And there was actually very recently a soldier who was Wiccan who died in Iraq and wanted a Wiccan star and not the pagans. You know, everybody kind of thinks, oh, the upside down star is the devil, it's evil, it's horrible. They just wanted a pagan star on the headstone, and they had to fight, I believe, tooth and nail to get that on. I'm pretty sure they won to get it to be an approved symbol for headstone. I mean, these are, you know, these are soldiers that are fighting. They're they're normal people. They're people who serve at wait on you in stores, or people who run companies, or people who do arrangement of jobs. They're not just weird old ladies with big noses and funny hats, green skin, and scattered around cauldrons and mixed things. A majority of the witches I have met, a lot of them do claim to be sensitive in some way or form, but I think growing up in that atmosphere, because witchcraft and Wiccan, I mean, I don't want to try and get away from saying witchcraft. You know, Wiccan does have a strong belief in the afterlife and interacting with it and using spirits. And it's, oh, I guess before I even go any further, too, you got to kind of say that it is a earth religion, is the best way I can kind of describe it. An earth religion. They have the star. They cast, when they do spells or some sort of magic or work or ritual, it's done with a casting of a circle to the elements, earth, wind, fire, water, and spirit. So a lot of that's very important to them, and so is, and obviously, like I said, that spirit. They don't believe in really so much as a god. They have more of kind of two gods, god and goddess. God who kind of runs the summer, the early parts of the year, goddess who is, the god being the moon, goddess being the sun, the giver of life, the warmth, the god being kind of more cool, representing a different time of year. And anybody, please correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a while since I've really looked into this. And a lot of the witches I do, and I've had a few chances to meet the high priest of the Witches of Salem on a few occasions, and great conversations with them. And they were actually, very psychic. And so actually, those of you listening to the show, I'm very skeptical of psychics. And the Witches of Salem that I've met and done a few different events with, they kind of proved themselves to me. And I definitely believe they had some sort of ability in a way or form. Real good people. And I think, like I just said, like we did here in that the first half of this hour, kind of gave the real vampire stories. We were talking about witchcraft, and we have your misconceptions. Now, here's the real thing. Kind of what I'm saying, Al?
Yep. I'm just thinking ahead here. There's a couple of Wiccans I'd like to get on the show here so we can hear right directly from them, too. So just kind of kicking that idea around in my head here.
Anybody out there? I don't know. See, we got one, two, almost counting myself, four people in the chat room. Anybody? I know there's a little bit of lag in what I say. There's about 15 seconds delay, but any of you, any input? Because there's so many different, like any religion even. You got your Catholics, your devout Catholics, I'm Catholic, but I don't go to church Catholics, You can always spread it out. And Wiccan is just like any other religion, I would imagine, that has its devout followers, its casual followers, and I'm only a follower when I guess I need to say I'm a follower of something type of follower.
I only do it on Halloween, Just making me think, a couple of weeks ago I was driving down a back road between Cambridge, New York, and White Creek, New York, actually, and I come by this field, and I just happened to look over, and there was all these rocks over there in this field piled up as an altar. There's piles of rocks on all four corners of the circle, and then in the middle was a big rock altar and a path leading off to the woods with a couple more piles of rocks. And I was wondering if I went there on like Halloween night or something, if I'd see something going on there,
And that's what's weird. The thing is, nowadays, what's happening is, it comes Halloween time, and everybody all of a sudden wants to have some sort of experience. So we're all pulling out the Ouija boards, and we're all pulling out our whatever form of device to try and communicate, and we're all going to go to some webpage that tells us about witchcraft so we can learn, and we're going to learn some black magic. And that's I think, if you talk to any true Wiccan and say, oh, are you a white witch or a black witch, they're going to tell you there's no such thing as a black witch. They're going to say there's no such thing as a white witch. There's just Wiccans, and they when you start getting into this white witch, black witch, bad magic, good magic stuff, you're starting to talk about kind of your extremists, your people who are pretending to be Wiccan. They're doing it because it's some sort of weird fad. They're doing it to try and fit in with something. They're not really following the true religion of Wiccan or witchcraft. They're following something they read on the internet or some weird book that they found, and not practicing the actual witchcraft, especially when you start talking about black magic.
Any idea where the broomstick and all that weird stuff come into play?
Actually, I think I have that, if you give me a... we'll keep talking here, and I'll see if I can find that. I saw that earlier.
Okay,
while
you're finding that... earlier, I was at over at Ron Kolick's site, I think it was, and he mentioned over there was one of the scariest things he'd ever seen was a pink Barbie Ouija board that someone brought to an investigation.
A pink Barbie Ouija board. I mean, that's just... you know... this is the last 10 minutes could be it. You know, all these things fall in. I mean, if you go according to the Catholic religion, especially if you went according to the Catholic religion in the 1700s, 1600s, and earlier, what we do is witchcraft. I'd be a witch. You'd be a witch. I go into a haunted house and try to talk to spirits. I would have been hung as a witch, and so would you. So would a lot. Anybody who listens to this show would have been considered a witch. I think, and it really drove the religion underground. It hurt it for some. I think it hurt it permanently. It hurt it forever. You know, this was. They're good people. They're not. They don't cast spells on you. There are spells. They do some magic. They follow the witch's reed. You know, anything you do will come back to you threefold. Stuff like that. You know, you don't use it to harm anybody or to hurt anybody else in any way, because according to their belief, whatever you do to them will come back to you three times. So if you cast a love spell and this is for somebody to like you, you're gonna like them three times more. But you know, you cast one for someone to die, you're going to die three times worse, type of thing. But you bring up
I thought you meant if you try to get one date, you'll wind up with three.
That's not a bad idea either. There's that echo again. Comes and goes. And there's witches in every religion. I'll put in a call. You know, now that we get past Halloween, next week we're past Halloween. I'll see if Ron Kolick can have Christian Day come on. You know, maybe Ryan and Christian could come on. You know, with it. He just did an event with them, and Christian Day is a high priest of the Witches of Salem. And it'd be quite interesting to hear his side of the coin on this. Like I said, I've always had a very, I've always had an interest in the topic, but never enough to. To really, I guess, become a witch. I don't really have any intention on doing that, but I've studied it, you know, pretty intently quite a few years ago. Now my study now has kind of come more into the ghost stuff, but there's a lot of the belief of the afterlife in witchcraft. And like I said, a lot of the psychics and I've met an entire group. Actually, their radio show just ended about 30 minutes ago. Hopefully none of you were listening to that before us and decided to switch over. An entire group, of paranormal investigators who are a coven of witches who also run a paranormal investigative group. they operate, obviously, quite differently than me and my group. A style really quite opposite. They use psychic interpreters, people who go in and they'll use their psychic ability and draw a picture of the ghost that's present, all sorts of things that are kind of off my radar. But, you know, we're in that time of year, and we brought up the Ouija board thing, and, you know, even the use of the Ouija board, or the talking board, you know, back in the ancient days, you would have been considered a witch. You would, you know, you would have been burned at the stake for trying to do, you know, for sitting around and using such a thing. And it kind of brings up, it's a weird topic for me. And I'm sure you've heard it, and everybody who's kind of into the paranormal has heard it at one time. Don't use Ouija boards. They're horrible devices. They enter in demons. And I have some people, honestly, I can't even mention them around it. And, you know, when they bring it up, I just have to agree with them because they're that adamant that there is one person in particular. I can't mention her by name. But her story about a Ouija board, she honestly felt a Ouija board ruined her life for a long time. And she is dead set. I was at an event with her, and somebody had brought an Ouija board in, and they refused. I'm leaving. I am not going to be here. You either kick them out of this room, this hotel that we're in. You either kick them out or I am gone. I will not be present anywhere near this thing. That adamant. And there's a lot of other people with that same thing. Oh, they're a gateway. They bring in evil, and they bring in it's a gateway to other horrible demonic creatures besides just the ghosts that are present. I sat down at the Owen Mansion in the first conference I held there, and we didn't use Ouija boards. They're called cryptic boards, a talking board. I guess a Ouija board is a brand, but in general we're talking about talking boards. We had, God, we must have had about 10, 15 of them out with the two high priests of the Salem witches, and we were all talking and asking questions away with more than a dozen Ouija boards out. You know, and one was an ancient talking board that was carved out of the bark of a tree that was, you know, in a cemetery in Salem. Their witches were hung. Kyle, you can't get much more demonic than this, right? And I don't think we brought anything horrible in. Maybe we did. We've had some weird stuff in there, but this is my argument. So that last 2 minutes of talking by me here, this is my argument. Is that this Ouija board, it's a piece of cardboard that's made in a toy factory, right, with Monopoly boards and Risk boards and War boards. Yeah, it's a gateway, right? Because we're asking it to communicate and to give us answers and questions. How is that any different than what we do with a digital recorder, a dowsing pendulum, or a K2 meter?
If you're just using it as a tool like any other tool, then I don't see the problem with it. I think the problem lies, the other tools untrained people can use and get away with it, where supposedly an untrained person or one that doesn't really know what they're getting into can actually harm themselves with a Ouija board where they can't harm themselves with an EMF meter.
You're right. You know what? I'm talking about, say, you know, a dowsing pendulum. I've seen people who will refuse to use a Ouija board, but will use a dowsing pendulum. And they'll sit there with the thing hanging over their hand and ask away with the questions. Are you here with us now? What is your name? Is it an A? Is it a B? Is it a C? Oh, it's a C. You know, how old are you? One, two, you know. These are the same questions you would ask on a talking board, but because you're holding a crystal and not the board, you're not going to allow something in evil. Or the same questions with a K2 meter. How many of you have I seen with a K2 meter go, are you here with us now? How old are you? Do you have a, you're doing the same thing. You're asking a spirit to come through something and communicate with you. I think the only major difference is with the talking board, is you are kind of mandated. You have to be in contact with it. A lot of times when I use a even if it's a dowsing pendulum, you have to be in contact. You don't have to be in contact with it, but 9 out of 10 times you are. They have ones you can use where you hang it off something without touching it. The K2 meter, you don't have to be holding it, and a lot of times you just set it in the middle of a room. A digital voice recorder, a lot of times you'll set down in front of you. So with the exception of not having physical contact with the device, what is the difference between using a K2 meter, a dowsing pendulum, even a voice recorder to try and communicate, than a Ouija board? And so then why are Ouija boards so evil that once you've let something in, you have to burn it in order to get rid of it, or no? You're not allowed to burn it. You have to bury it. And then the people who bury it, it still comes back. You know, where does this stuff come from? And I don't know. Am I losing my mind, Al?
No, not at all. I don't know. I just keep getting back to where we started this whole conversation, specialists, you know. Where do all these ideas come from? Well, somebody dreamed them up and decided that was a bad idea. So, yeah, okay, I agree, it must be a bad idea. And then it just proliferates throughout the whole genre, or whatever you want to call it, where at this particular point in time, we don't know what's bad and what's good. We don't know if it hurts or it doesn't. So, you know, it's, I don't know.
All right, and, you know, and that's kind of, you know, where I am is, you know, and I can understand people's, you know, kind of animosity and skepticism in using the talking boards. There have been a lot of horror stories associated with them. I don't know. One, it's just a piece of shabby cardboard that is made by a toy company. These are, you get it in the same aisle as a game of Monopoly or Connect Four, you know, and
I have to say, the only true, what I consider paranormal experience I've ever had was with a Ouija board. And it was with people that I trust implicitly, so I know they weren't trying to pull anything over my eyes. I mean, it was my wife was sitting down to the board with another female friend of ours, and that board started flying around so fast we couldn't keep up with what it was saying. I actually had to go get a notebook, stand behind her, and write the letters down one at a time, and then look back to see what it spelled afterwards, because we couldn't keep track of it. And you know, I've had other equipment and things like that that I listen to, Frank's boxes and all that stuff, and very subjective evidence, in my opinion, that I'm not convinced. But that one actually convinced me, because I was in somewhat of a controlled environment, because I knew all the people there personally before we even got into this. And just that one board was weird stuff going on around it. You know, we took it home, and weird stuff was happening at our house. So
yeah,
we actually set the board up, and we said, and the board wound up telling us it wanted to go home. So we said, you know, can we take you back tomorrow? It's awful late tonight. And it said yes. The next day, she took it right back to the owners and gave it back to them. And we didn't have any more trouble. Now, she lent that board to her sister, and apparently her sister must have ignored it or something, because it was clear this board knew where it belonged, who owned it, and didn't want to be anywhere else. It was only like a week later that this sister's house burned down. Now, you could say coincidence or whatever, but to me, there was a clear line of evidence there that, to me, it was undisputable. So.
I see what you're saying.
So, you know, it helps when you're around people you trust. You know, you can see amusing boards on TV, and some of the things I see, I'm not sure if I trust what I'm seeing or not, because I don't know the people. I don't know their reputation. I don't know their credibility. But
right.
that was one tool where I actually saw paranormal things happen, and there was other things that happened that night besides the board, too. Blue flashes going through the house, and lights going on and off, and boots moving on their own, and all kinds of stuff. But that is the one tool where we actually carried on a conversation with someone who was not happy, and they told us so.
Really? It's kind of funny. Did I say that? Oh, I didn't say this on here. I remember I was just telling this about you before you went on last night. You know, it's funny. You know, the Houghton Mansion is, you know, lately it's been a real feast or famine with the building. We'll go down and we'll have some awesome paranormal activity going on one night. And God, last night it was dead. These ghosts just did not want to have anything to do with us, I guess. And hell, you know, you take it or leave it. You know, that's the way it goes, I suppose. And there's nothing you can do about it. But the I go upstairs and everyone's using the box there, the ovulus, to talk, and it's going away, you know. And for those of you who are familiar with the ovulus, it kind of sounds like you know talk box thing, you know, and it's talking away. And I go in the room and it just stops. It stops. And I'm like, oh, come on, keep talking. And every now and then it would spit out a random word. I mean, like, apple, Peter, you know, stupid words. And I was like, oh, come on, talk. And I was like, well, apparently it doesn't like me. It's done for the day or whatever. It doesn't want to talk to me. It stopped when I come in the room. So I'm going to leave. And then it just goes, crack.
Well, that's it. You know, I'm not completely sold on the obelisk either. So I take, you know, the words that it was saying with a grain of salt. But something like that in direct response to you, where you know, you walk in the room and it stops talking, and then you leave and it starts up again. Now, something like that, I would consider more evidential than what it's actually saying.
Right. It's like anything else. I mean, I can listen to a voice recorder and hear a lot of something, you know, all the time, I guess. And it might be a ghost, but just like EVP, you know, you're looking for it to be the that response that kind of answers your question, and that it kind of did, but. You know, what about all the time, all those other words it was saying that wasn't in a response to my question? You know, I kept saying apple and murderous. Maybe, I don't know. And honest, actually, you know, talking about the obvious, you know, right on it, you know, just one of the few things you see right on the Ouija board for entertainment purposes only, you know, da 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 da. It says the same thing right on the obvious, for entertainment purposes only. Not truly used for talking with spirits, blah, 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 something like that, you know?
Yeah, like that night I was down there at the mansion, you know, got a few EVPs, nothing really.
Still there? Uh-oh. Did you get cut out on us in the very last, what are we at now, 6 minutes of the episode here, Al? Apparently you did. Or I did. Well, if anybody's still listening, or you can hear me, or you can hear Al. If you can hear me, well then, I will say goodnight. And if you can't, well then I'm talking to myself. And what's for? So, I got a good 5 minutes now to sit here and kind of talk to myself. Got a few of you here in the chat room. The Gettysburg Spirit, Paranormal Guys, Rod DeCrio, Merce, all sorts of you in there. Cutlass, or not, I said Cutlass, yeah, Cutlass. Thanks for listening. Glad to see a few people in the chat room. Glad to see you kind of chatting away. I was out of the chat room for a minute. Looks like you're not quite with our topic, but whatever. At least you're listening to us while we're on. Al, if you pop back in anytime, would be cool and be great. Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we will be back next week, the same time, same place. And we're going to be having some kind of... Oh, there's Al.
5 minutes before the end of the show. Every week, it kicks me out.
I knew it was. That's all right. I was just about to say, next week we're gonna do kind of a special thing, and I invite everybody in the chat room and everybody listening to call in with some ghost stories. It's only a day after Halloween. We can still be in the mood, in the festive spirit, right? So call in. Give us some ghost stories. I have a few. I aren't going to be kind of your traditional sit around the campfire type stories. I want to sit around and I want to say some real ghost stories. You know, some of the experiences over my last 6-7 years of paranormal investigating, some of my favorite moments of being around ghosts and the paranormal activity. So I invite maybe other people who are listening to kind of come in with some of their favorite stories and things that, you know, might have actually happened.
Well, I don't have any. I only have one. So you better get me down to the mansion before next Sunday night so I can make some.
Well, maybe you should be down on Friday, and hopefully you'll be down on maybe Saturday night. We'll get down Saturday night. Hey, right, it's Halloween night, and we all know the veil between our world and the spirit world is at its thinnest, and that they can move freely between us and them. So we should definitely be able to do it Friday night and get you a date with at least Mary, you know, and see what's going on.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, because I was not overwhelmed the last time I was there. They were hiding from me, so I'm coming for bear this time.
No, it'll be a lot of fun. We'll have to do that. We'll be in touch over the week. It's a busy week. I also want to invite anybody who is in the Massachusetts area. I don't know if any of you are. Feel free to watch WGBY, the PBS station out of Springfield, Massachusetts, here in Western Mass. I will be a special guest that night on that show at 8 o'clock at night. They're going to be premiering a documentary about the Haunted Houghton Mansion, and they had a lot of interviews with me, not only just about the mansion, but about ghost hunting in general. I invite you all to watch that, and I'll see if I can get a copy of it, maybe get some clips up on the internet, without getting in too much trouble for copyright infringement and all that happy stuff.
Ah, we don't worry about that. Can't get blood out of a stone. Let them sue us if they want to.
All right. Get in line.
Okay, next week, make sure you call in, get in the chat room with your ghost stories. November 15th, demonologist Keith Johnson will be here, so you don't want to miss that show, and we're lining up new guests all the time, so make sure you join us next Sunday night, 7 p.m. right here, blogtalkradio.com/haunted. Thanks, everybody.
Peace out.